Welcome to the Fair Data Forecast, Gregor Stuhler. And I'm just going to start this discussion by asking you about your background and how you came to start ScoutBee. I'm assuming you're one of the founders. Is that correct?
That is correct, Alan. Thanks for having me. I have a background in computer science and then started on top of that electrical engineering. Eventually became a project engineer with a big focus on supply chain and procurement in a small, medium-sized enterprise, and started to combine my two worlds, electrical engineering, procurement, and data and big data in order to solve the current procurement and supply chain issues.
Exactly. And ScoutBee's been around since, what, 2015 you got started, maybe?
Exactly. 2015, we started back in the days mostly as a kind of consultancy because, of course, doing an MBA, et cetera, is expensive. So we had to put some money into our bank. And we used this money then to fund our software as a service product that went first to market then in 2017.
And what was the initial vision? What problem were you trying to solve at that point?
To organize the world's information around suppliers and make it very easy for our customers and our users to explore, discover, and take the right decision based on that data.
And I looked through some of your case studies, and discovery seems to be a key part of what you're delivering here. Is the focus still on discoverability and sort of winnowing through supplier alternatives if you're a procurement department?
Yes. Discoverability and observability usually starts on with your existing supply base. If you're a large corporate in FMCG like Unilever, Procter & Gamble, etc., or an automotive, you usually have a quite complex supply base. We are talking hundreds of thousands of suppliers. And it's not very easy to understand all the capabilities and the opportunities that you have with your existing supplier base, but also not what kind of risks you are exposed to. And this part is usually where we start with. To help you understand where do you have opportunities within your existing supply base to become more innovative, cheaper, more resilient, etc. And then we move to the second part of it, and that is discoverability of suppliers outside of your existing supply base, where we organize the world's information of suppliers that you do not know yet and help you to bring in the right competition in order to drive, again, profitability, sustainability, but also resilience.
So it's both internal and external sources that you're bringing together and to one knowledge base?
Yes, exactly. So we have one unique feature or one unique technology that we are using, and that is a supply-based knowledge graph. And we are feeding this knowledge graph with four different dimensions, and we usually refer to it as 4 times 90 degrees to get your 360 degrees. And 90 degrees is coming from your internal data, your ERP data, SRM data, etc. The next 90 degrees is coming from third-party data sources that can be financial data like Dun & Bradstreet, but also ESG data from EcoVadis. The next 90 degrees is web data, public knowledge. This data is provided through us. We have a very extensive crawling and bot network that is retrieving information of those suppliers. And the last 90 degrees is then the supplier themselves that are providing information through a questionnaire, through an existing supplier portal. And we combine all of those different sources then to one singular magic record. And that is one of our superpowers, that we are able to match and merge hundreds, millions of different of data sources into one singular supplier representation. And that helps us, of course, to answer very, very powerful questions and help the customer to organize their supply base.
So that's a big challenge you just described. And I'm thinking of it in terms of disambiguation, because it's hard to find, is this the same supplier over here that was over there in another source? Also, just the supplier leads that you're generating, trying to get quality leads that match up with the procurement person's requirements. And yes. So how do you do that matching?
Yeah, indeed. It's actually the holy grail when it comes to supplier master data management. And I think that the one piece that sets us apart is we do not want to interfere with operational data. So there is critical data that you need to get your production line running. Mm-hmm. And this is about like a small subset of data around, of course, invoicing data, bank details, and so on. This piece we don't touch. We actually go one step back and create somewhat of a strategic supplier pool, where, of course, we have also a little bit more flexibility when it comes to matching and accuracy of 95 or 96% is actually acceptable. And this is something that we are introducing now into the market. We have potentially the best performing model out there, but it's still not perfect. Nevertheless, we create a system where the customer can start working with. And coming back to your question, from a matching and merging perspective, we use the knowledge graph representation to not only match, for example, on an address or a text snippet that is similar, but rather on multiple dimensions. And the more data sources we add, the better, obviously, our matching and the higher our confidence in that. And this is, I would say, it's common practice, right, in non-B2B applications, but in supplier supply-based knowledge graphs, actually quite new.
Yeah. So is the user actually seeing these confidence scores in the user interface in this case?
They do not. So try to keep the user away from anything that would distract them from the decision making. And we work together with the client and the IT teams in the background, of course, so make sure that only relevant data is hitting the customer, the user. What we show the user, however, is where the data is coming from and why we think it's the right data. So we are very, very much focused on explainable AI to give the user context on where this data is coming from in order to let them use their own creativity and business knowledge to drive the right decision based on that information.
Right. Now, when it comes to how you're working with your customers, it sounds like there's an upfront process that happens with a new customer. You're working with their team. You're really sort of customizing a solution for them in a sense. Is that correct?
So we have a standard solution that is getting deployed. What is custom, though, are the data pipelines that are feeding into the knowledge graph. So what we've specialized in is creating somewhat of a flexible connective tissue with data pipelines and transformers that makes it actually quite easy for us to collect data from various different sources, transform them into the data standard that we want to be represented in the knowledge graph, and then load this into the knowledge graph. From there, however, almost everything is standard. The system has a decent flexibility when it comes to what data should be displayed, how it should be displayed, etc. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's a standardized business application. And we want also to keep it like that in order to drive innovation across of our customer board and not only for a subset.
Yeah, exactly. And so this sort of approach sounds like it might be scalable in the sense that you talk a lot about scale in your literature, and I'm wondering, is this a fully automated approach in a sense? I mean, or mostly fully automated once it's up and running?
Exactly. So as soon as it's up and running, it's completely automated. You have, of course, somewhat of a early engineering approach where you have to connect the different data sources, you have to write the transformers and so on. But that's actually, we're talking here about a couple of weeks in order to get this up and running. As soon as those transformers and those pipeline exists, the system is fully automated.
Yeah. So you've been in business for a while now. How is your vantage point, your objectives and your successes? How have they changed over time?
Yeah, very much though. So when we founded the company in 2015, there was no big data and supply chain or procurement. That was nobody would even like to talk about. In 2017, nobody wanted to talk about cloud, AWS and Azure. Everybody would call us crazy if we would even ask them to store the data in the cloud. And then 2019, 2020, of course, with the COVID crisis, things accelerated rapidly. And things changed for us a lot. So first, from our customer perspective, we were very much focused on automotive and manufacturing back in the days. When COVID hit, those customers were too busy and were not able to talk to us because they were not able to cope with the situation. They didn't have the data muscle, and they didn't know how to, for example, ingest now COVID forecast data and potential lockdown information, connect this to their existing supply base and make smart predictions. They simply went from firefighting to firefighting. We saw many clients that went from moving business out of China to India just to move it back 4 weeks later from India to China in order to keep actually their production facilities running. So this changed a lot for us. One, the awareness of those companies that they need analytical capability and data as a muscle changed. There's no doubt anymore in those companies that they need to get better in that. And on the other side, we also realized that our software is actually applicable in many other industries. Yeah. And now our biggest industry actually became fast-moving consumer goods, and we are also quite certain that other industries like retail and so on will follow. Where we supported back in the days, then during COVID, our customers to keep the shelves filled. And there are quite some famous case studies out there, but some of our customers were actually launching when it comes to, for example, hand sanitizers, while other companies are struggling to even get their production up and running. And that's where we saw the full power of having an unfair advantage when it comes to supplier data and being able to react faster than your competition. And this is where a lot of our use cases actually emerged 2020 and 21. And those were now proven and made their way into production over the last couple of years. And we have been a startup that went through a lot of crises. I mean, after COVID, there was then the Russian war in Ukraine. There was the Suez Canal blockage, etc. It didn't stop. I think it's now crisis number 9. And let's see what the banking crisis will do to us. But it's something that was, of course, for us challenging. But on the other side, was surfacing the term supply chain management and procurement and made it aware and gave a lot of visibility and also budget, of course, to our companies.
And it sounds like you have no lack of use cases that you're addressing at this point. Is it opportunistic how you're approaching those, or do you have a long-term strategy that you're executing?
Yes. So the long-term strategy in the end is helping the customer to build out this data muscle. But indeed, it's for us very important to talk to the client, make sure that they understand what kind of business cases they want to follow and where they also have an internal return on investment to present. Data products, in particular products around risk resilience and so on, do not have an obvious return on invest. And the further you are away from a disaster, the less aware people are, right? So this whole COVID thing is already a thing of the past. So they forgot about that. In 2021, everybody was investing in risk solutions, etc. This is now not an issue anymore. And the people are already past that. They are now investing in costs, in inflation, inflationary prices, and so on. And it's very important to guide the customer and help them to communicate the value of such a solution internally so that they have an easier time positioning that.
It seems the data environment's getting more and more complicated, though. And so countries are, for example, are demanding the data that's about their people in their country is kept in country, for example. There are all sorts of regulations about personal data and how that's handled. There are, supply chains are so complicated now and they're so deep. How can you sort of surface suppliers that may have had some problems in the past and make your customers aware of those problems? For example, I'm thinking in terms of here in the US, we have what's called the False Claims Act. And so defense contractors are required to vet their suppliers. So if you've got a software supplier somewhere in the supply network, and let's say you're working on a classified contract, then that entity has to be cleared for that purpose. And so if you're found guilty of falsely asserting that your suppliers are all cleared for the classified information, then there could be a big fine there. So are you sort of thinking along regulatory lines in that sense, or how's your approach given that you've got so many sources and so much data that you're working with?
Yeah, very good point. So it doesn't really matter what kind of challenge you pick, but when it comes to strategic supply base management, it's usually that there's an internal or an external need when it comes to understanding your supply base better. And your external need, what you described right now, is regarding regulatory requirements or compliance. And that could be then the False Claim Act, that could be the Supply Chain Act of Germany, that could be the Diversity Act, etc. And it's usually then related to, okay, I have a data need. Where do I get the data from? How do I ingest this data? How do I create context with this data to my internal spend, etc.? And how do I drive decisions based on that? And the pattern is always the same. And you're completely right. Two things are right now exploding. One is the regulatory requirements and the data landscape. And going backwards maybe 10 years, it was perfectly fine for a company of a size like General Electric or Procter & Gamble to track their top 1,000, top 2,000 suppliers, like tracking their financial ability, etc., a couple of hundred, maybe a couple of thousands of data sets. And now just 10 years later, it's not okay anymore. You have to track hundreds of difference of data points, and you have to not only track this for your top 1,000, but for all of your suppliers. And not only that, you now have to start tracking this for your tier two. So we are not talking about 100 or 1,000, 10,000 of 100,000, not even millions. We are talking billions of different of data sources and data points that you have to track. And it will be increasing going forward. The German Supply Chain Act for driving sustainability and fair supply chain condition came out of nothing, right? Though there was like no warning. And those things will emerge now quicker and faster. And also the crises are not less threatening for your supply base. There will be a new pandemic. There will be hopefully not a new war, but you have to be prepared for that. And also this is data. understanding on a COVID, for example, the COVID data is a very, very nice example of how poorly companies are equipped. So the COVID data is probably the best data set that is out there on the planet. So there's literally the activity of humans on a zip code level using their mobile devices and a forecast with a 95% accuracy because of the vaccination rate, if that area will go into a lockdown or not. This data is available through an API. You literally can download it or access it quite easily. Almost no one is using it because they have no clue on how to tap into that, how to ingest it in their existing supply base, and how to drive context and decisions based on that. Right. The data as a muscle is not existing. So no matter what crisis is hitting supply bases today, it's usually ending in chaos, unless they have a company like us that helps them to deal with that and create actually clarity around their situation right now and drive the right decision. Long answer.
Yeah, but it's a really good answer. And I wanted to follow up on how you're building this context. And one of the frustrations I've had with data analysis is that it's not evident what somebody else's intent has been when they're sharing data sets. And so you're building context to determine the original intent, perhaps. And then there are other intents that might be in view for other users of it. So how are you building these contexts so that it's understandable how the data is usable?
Yeah, very good question. So in the end, we cannot make up data or hallucinate data. The data is they are not. What we can provide is meaningful context. And in simple terms, let's assume you want to build a greener supply chain. And maybe there is a data set that says how green a supplier is, right? This data exists. But you probably want to focus on the suppliers that you have a lot of money with, right? So you first have to create context of this green and the amount of money that you're spending with suppliers in order to have a lot of impact. Mm-hmm. Then you potentially have a context related to contracts. So what are contracts that are right now or that are running out soon and that you probably want to renegotiate? And what are the ones that are sitting with suppliers that do not have the right capability regarding their sustainability efforts to fulfill your internal strategies that you want to probably not renegotiate, but rather find an alternative supplier? And just by combining those three data points, you already have created an internal organic movement almost to constantly phase out suppliers that don't fit your strategy and constantly focus on suppliers that are improving your internal strategy when it comes to sustainability. And this can be done then with various of difference of data points, right? You can do this with risk, with innovation, with costs, with soft skills, with proximity to your logistics centers. It doesn't really matter. The challenge is always the same. Find the right data, connect it to your system, create context, and drive behavior.
Right. And part of the context in my experience is fleshing out the relationships of the entities and the data so that you have these interactions and you're studying the events and interactions of the data as well. And you're taking snapshots in time of how those interactions are happening, so you're understanding the context that way. Are you enriching your data to add more relationships, to infer more relationships, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. I mean, our main effort is to build out our own data network and making it easier for customers to connect to more sources. We have a platform-first approach. So if there's a certain data need and it can be generated, for example, through web scraping, and there's no data partner out there, we will do it our own and help to get this data to our customers. As soon as their data partner is emerging, we would always go to the data partner in order to always get the best data to the customer. And from that side, the the whole piece around context, you're completely right. It's one, the data source that are available, but also the templates that you give to the customer, because the customer usually do not have again, data as a muscle, right? They do not understand what kind of pieces of data they can connect to create context and drive decisions. And this is something that we can, of course, support with too. And by doing so, driving a standard on like how to do actually proper supply-based management. And that is literally what we are talking here about, is strategic supply-based optimization and supply lifecycle management using big data and AI. And this is something that we will see emerging in the future. And we already see the top 1% of the customers, also our companies out there using that. There will be more following going forward.
And so one more question. I know you have another appointment soon. I'm wondering, given all the number of sources that you're bringing together, are more and more of these sources becoming a cost for you in terms of having to license them to get the data you need from them for the purpose you're using it for? Is there a risk of this sort of model becoming unsustainable just because of the cost it might involve?
No. So what our approach was always platform first, and in the end, our main focus is getting the data to the customer. There are different models that we run with the data partners, from the customer has to have a direct relationship to the data partner through an API, to data partners providing access to their database, and we are matching that to our knowledge graph. We are very flexible. In the end, it's for us much more important that the customer starts using the data. Mm-hmm. We also don't have any significant commission or upside on reselling the data. We want to sell our software subscription of our platform.
Yeah.
The more data is connected to it, the better.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so what are you looking forward to this year before I sign off with you? What are your plans for this year?
Yeah, of course, we want to build out our data platform further, and we want to help the customers with the right business cases. We just recently launched our solution when it comes to supply intelligence. We will soon announce our supply intelligence platform. We will see a lot of customers using that to drive decisions. And by adding more and more data to the system, we will also see more use cases emerging. And we will get closer to this singular supplier profile and the singular supplier profile representation. Yeah, and we are looking forward actually towards the end of the year, hopefully with less crisis and with less drama, but maybe still with the same punch when it comes to supply chain and procurement, and the that we see that the ambitions that companies had in the past driving sustainability, innovation, and profitability in supply chain will continue.
Well, it sounds exciting, and I wish you all the luck in the world with this year and following years.
Thank you so much, Alan, and thanks for having me in this wonderful podcast.
Well, and thank you.